Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. We kick off this almost Heritage Day with yet another weird law from around the world. This one comes to you, once again, courtesy of the United States, but this time the state of Pennsylvania. In the state of Pennsylvania, it is illegal to catch fish with your mouth. Strictly prohibited. You're not allowed to do that. I suppose that is probably why they have fishing equipment out there. But if I'm honest, anyone that's caught fish with their mouth should be allowed to keep it. Nevertheless, you're tuned into the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the decision by Business Unity South Africa to challenge the latest employment equity targets that came into effect on the 1st of September. We're going to speak to Business Unity South Africa about that and get their thoughts around what's happening there. Then we've got a conversation with the Chief Executive Officer of RemGrow Limited. They gave us a results update on the performance for the year ended 30 June 2025. We're going to get a sense of that company's performance. Then we're going to have a conversation around the decision by Taiwan to place restrictions on chip exports to South Africa. Taiwan is one of the leading exporters of chips around the world, and this decision comes at a particularly interesting time as Taiwanese and South African tensions continue to increase. We're going to take a look at that and see what we make of it. Then we've got a conversation around choosing the right medical aid with the team at Bonitas. We're going to get a sense of how best to go about that. And then, because it is Tuesday, we've got an agri conversation. We're going to be doing an update on the challenges that persist in the beef and red meat markets. We've spoken about this in the past in the form of the challenges that presented themselves through the foot and mouth disease outbreaks that we've been seeing. We're going to take a look at where we stand at the moment and what is continuing to keep beef prices elevated.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As always, we kick off the show with a sense of how the markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by Stembile Bopela, who is the analyst who is an analyst at FNB Wealth and Investments, to take a look at market movements and see what we make of it. Stembile, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on the show. I can't help but start with the rand. The rand against the dollar, 17 rand 25. I don't remember the last time I quoted 17 rand 20 anything. I think this might be the strongest performance we've had on the rand for this year. Clearly, a weaker dollar at the moment is benefiting the South African rand. And alongside the interest rate decisions that we saw last week from both the central bank in South Africa's case and the US Fed, stronger rand, how are you feeling about that?
Hi, Jimmy. Happy Heritage Week to you and the listeners. I hope you enjoy the fake Friday. the rand has definitely been very resilient. And as you mentioned, it is a combination of factors. I think traders are digesting, interest rates decisions. We had back-to-back meetings last week, so quite a lot to read through, especially in terms of the outlook from some of the banks. The US Fed giving us more of a sort of hawkish cut, if you would want to call it that, while our local Saab deciding to keep, things unchanged, which was widely anticipated in any case. But definitely we are seeing that weaker sort of dollar in response to some of these decisions that have been made, impacting the sort of supporting the rand. But also, the rand is still very much a commodity currency. And so we have seen very strong sort of gains from some of the key commodities. Gold and platinum stocks have been on fire for the very same reason. And so we have been seeing very strong moves from the JSE, largely thanks to the resources sector, and specifically the mining, the precious metals exposed mining stocks there.
Fun fact, I just had a look at a rand chart. It was this exact week in 2024, the week of the 23rd of September, that we last saw the rand at 17 rand 20. So interesting levels that we find ourselves in. And back then we got as low as 17 rand and 6 cents. I wonder where we will close out this week. But let's look at the top 40. We are, I think, as the last I checked, we got as close as 99,595 points. So just about 400 points away from that $100,000 magic marker. We reached that mark on the All Share, and the All Z continues to do well. But on the top 40, that would be something else to get to.
Yeah, I mean, we really are right at the cusp of that critical level. And, you know, again, it's thanks to, you know, we are seeing these record levels on the top 40 being driven in large part by the mining stocks. We have seen just general positive, you know, performances across the sector in terms of just more robust equity markets. Sentiment is generally more risk on. I think we've recovered very, very well from sort of the initial sort of April tariff-induced sort of selling pressures that we saw. And so sentiment has turned a bit more risk. The appetite for risk is a bit better. You know, I think even in international markets, we are still seeing traders sort of chasing growth in the AI sort of themes. And so there is sort of cautiously optimistic sentiment even around SA income stocks. I think, you know, there's portfolio reshuffling is quite tricky. You know, miners are still outperforming. So the question is very much around, you know, where do you... You know, how do you fund that rotation? You know, as I mentioned, gold and platinum stocks are flying. So I think few are keen to sort of trim those positions. So it is an interesting development to keep an eye on. But yeah, we are seeing, you know, quite strong underpin for some of the growth stocks, again, given where we are in the cycle.
Stair, what are you looking at going into this last quarter of the year? I mean, we've had such a busy year. We still have things like the G20 gathering coming up. We still have another interest rate decision out of the US. We've got our own MPC, or rather our own monetary, a midterm budget policy statement coming up on the 12th of November. What are you looking at from a market's perspective, or even from a sector perspective? Are we still riding the commodity wave?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very important, as you mentioned, some of the key interest rate decisions that are left for the rest of the year. Our sort of perspective is that, you know, the SARB is going to keep the stance as is going forward for the rest of the year. But, you know, the expectation is there's still room for perhaps the Fed to do some further trimming over the next two meetings. The sort of the magnitude perhaps is still in question, but I think those are going to be very key sort of risk events to keep an eye on. Keeping an eye on the sort of AI theme, I think there's still quite a lot of sort of optimism and exuberance in that story that is still driving, you know, the likes of the NVIDIA that's still surging. You know, they announced a further deal, a $100 billion deal investment into OpenAI. So, you know, the sort of deals that are being made within that space, so the demand that is still in that space is still quite robust. And so we are seeing, you know, as much as the sort of anticipation was that we might start seeing some almost a plateau after the very strong run that some of these AI stocks have realized, we are still seeing, you know, very sort of bullish sentiments going into the rest of the year and even into the medium term. And so I think those are definitely going to be some of the key things to keep an eye on.
Lots to keep an eye on and lots to look ahead to as we wrap up the year. But for now, we take the win that is a stronger rand as we head into a public holiday tomorrow. And we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Sistembile Bopela, who is an analyst at FNB Wealth and Investments, for giving us her thoughts around what's been moving some of the markets and where we go to from here.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
On the 1st of September 2025, earlier in this month, we received an update around employment equity targets and how they would affect employers that employ more than 50 people in South Africa. Following that, Business Unity South Africa has taken to the courts to challenge the implementation of these adjustments and these amendments to these targets, citing that a lot needs to be thought through here. I'm joined on the line by the Chief Executive Officer of Business Unity South Africa, Kulekani Mate, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Tata Mate, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on the show. Let's start with an overview of the reasons why you're challenging this.
Thank you for the opportunity, and good afternoon, good evening to the listeners of SFM Market Update. So first and foremost, BUSA is not challenging transformation. BUSA is not challenging the idea or the principle of numerical sector targets. What BUSA is challenging is the manner in which these targets were developed. We believe and contend that it did not follow the law as set out in Section 15, Capital A of the Employment Equity Amendment Act. We also contend that as a result of not following the correct procedure and process, the resulting targets are irrational, unimplementable, and therefore we're asking the courts to set aside these targets and allow or require that a proper process be undertaken so that targets that really meet the test are put in place. So that is essentially where we stand.
I think there can be no doubt that Business Unity South Africa is on the side of business and on the side of transformation. But let's take a look at some of the steps that could have been put in place, some of the things or the considerations rather that should have gone into this process. I mean, for a process to have been announced back in April to then be implemented in September, one would hope that consultation would have taken place. What areas should have been looked at when coming up with these sorts of targets, and what conversations should have been had?
So, you know, there are a couple of things, and it's easy to get confused by the arguments that have been made, certainly by the departments when we dealt with them. So let me try and clarify that. There have been many meetings between business and the Department of Employment and Labor. This dates back to 2018 when the amendment bill was still in Parliament, but alongside that, the department started consultations on what would be the regulations that would be implemented. We participated in that, but we pointed out to the department that the law empowering that particular consultation was not yet in place. And so we considered that to be informal, right? So what happens is that fast forward to 2025, the law comes into effect on the 1st of January, 2025. The department is banking on the engagements that happened prior to the law coming into effect. And they say, well, we've consulted. We don't have to spend as much time in consultation as we ought to. We contend that that is not following the law, because the law comes into effect and it sets out what needs to be followed. That's one. Two, even if you accept the consultation and engagement that took place before, it would only matter if the department had kept to the text of what was put before employers. Unfortunately, they've been putting out different versions each time. The last version in 2023, which we engaged the department on, and in 2024, was suddenly changed in 2025. And so you can just see that there is no follow through, there is no clear reasoning, and there was no expectation, I mean, explanation for all of these changes. And this is why we're saying to the court, let the right process be followed so that you can have the resulting regulations and targets that are acceptable to everybody.
The last thing we want is a one-size-fits-all approach to something that we desperately need to have a lot more thought put into. Ntate Mate, I want to get your thoughts around what happens in the event that the court proceedings don't go as planned. What are the risks that we're facing here if we don't correct this?
So look, I mean, the court will either rule in our favor or rule in the favor of the department, in which case we will obviously abide by the court ruling. But we are seeking here an adjudication of a matter on which we seem to be reaching a stalemate with the department. So there is no question about what will happen. If we win, we would expect, or if the court rules in our favor, we would expect the department to then abide by the court ruling in the same way that we will abide by the court ruling.
Mm. And when we look at the outcome of this, I mean, we've all agreed that from a sectorial perspective, from a business perspective, from an operational perspective, even from a national perspective, transformation is necessary. It is urgent. How do we balance the need for transformation with going about transforming properly?
You know, it is actions such as the ones taken by the department that actually give equity policy and equity legislation a bad name when things are not done properly. So we are here standing on the side of transformation and equity policies, and we say we want this to be done right, so that companies can comply, but comply with the right kinds of policies. Not doing things right empowers those who are enemies of transformation to find fault, not to comply. So we really urge the government to abide by the ruling of the court if the court rules in our favor, the same way that we will abide by the court ruling if the court rules against us.
What risk does this place on regulation and the implementation of regulation if we start to get conflicting regulatory codes and we start to get legislation that doesn't align? Does it not then create a problem if we are to look at it down the road, saying that this policy directly perhaps contradicts another policy that we have and therefore we don't have a way of implementing either policy? Does that not set us further back?
Well, it does to some degree, but it is not something that is insurmountable. And this is why following the law, following the right process is important. So here we stand on the side of the law. We're saying, let the right processes be followed so that what results is acceptable to everybody. Ideally, you want a matter such as transformation to be regulated in one sort of a piece of legislation. What we have at the moment is that we have the BEE codes also regulating aspects of this. You have the Employment Equity Act regulating an aspect of this. That is not ideal, but it is what it is. What we're insisting on is, let us demonstrate to the world that we are a law-abiding country. Those entrusted with the exercise of state power, they too must abide by the law. They must exercise state power lawfully and rationally so that we can give the necessary confidence to investors and to everybody that we are a country that is governed by the law.
Rationality and sense need to prevail when we look at these important matters, especially with all eyes on South Africa and how we are dealing with these matters. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the Chief Executive Officer of Business Unity South Africa, Kulekani Mate, for joining us. Take a look at the decision by Business Unity South Africa to challenge the employment equity targets that have been put forward and implemented in the courts.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
In a world where a lot can change in 6 years, you can rest assured that Hino's 6-year drivetrain warranty won't. All Hino trucks now come standard with a 6-year drivetrain warranty, protecting your investment all the way from pistons to gears. Built to keep your business moving, supporting uptime, growth, and daily operations. Because although a lot can change in 6 years, our warranty promise won't. Terms and conditions apply. Hino all the way.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Remgro Limited, one of the largest investment firms listed on the JSE, has given us their results for the financial year ended 30 June 2025. Increase in headline earnings per share, increase in ordinary dividend. There is a special dividend involved there as well. And there are a slew of other updates that came through from that SENS announcement. We're going to take a look at this with the Chief Executive Officer of the Remgro business. That is Yanni Durante. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of the performance of the business and where we go to from here. Well, Yanni, always lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. A strong performance from a group perspective, but obviously with the size of the Remgro Group, that is made up of a lot of different moving parts and a lot of different moving businesses within the Remgro family. Take us through your initial thoughts around the overall performance of the group.
Yeah, good afternoon, Jimmy, and thanks for the introduction. Yeah, we're very proud of the results. We think it's a solid set of results. As you rightly say, the headline earnings is up by 38.4%, and we've increased the dividend quite nicely. We've even declared a special dividend. But it's really, as you rightly say, it's because of the performance of the underlying company. We had increased contribution from Mediclinic, had a strong performance, a very strong performance from OUTsurance. Rainbow Chicken has turned around, so the chicken company is flying, no pun intended. And then RCL Foods, they took a solid set of results. And then on the companies that was actually underperforming last year, it's actually coming through quite nicely now. It's improving quite a bit. It's Heineken Beverage Holdings Limited. It's slowly returning to profitability, margin recovery. And so, as we said in the analyst presentation this morning, 80% of our portfolio is actually at a positive contribution to the earnings. So, overall, a very pleasing performance.
Well, Miani, let's take a look at some of the moving parts that didn't have such a good year. I'm thinking about the likes of Total Energies and the Momentum Group that didn't add as much to the business as some of the other business units. Take us through some of what's been happening within those businesses. I know that within the Momentum holding as well, there was a disposal to speak of there. Just take us through some of those movements.
Yeah, so Momentum is quite an easy one to explain, Jimmy. It's really, we sold the shares, so we didn't have the dividends. We didn't get the dividends. So it's just, so actually Momentum, if you look at Momentum's own results, they had a good result. So there's nothing wrong with Momentum. We just didn't have the asset in our portfolio anymore and didn't get the dividends. Total is also underlying good performance, operationally good performance. The only thing that happened to them and gave them the negative earnings projection is because of the oil price. So if you revalue your stock, the price at the beginning of the year was higher than the stock at the end of the year. So it was a negative revaluation of the stock. But the underlying performance was good. We sold the refineries and on the retail business, all good. So there's no concerns there. CIVH, the company that we're actually now doing to deal with Vodacom, hopefully imminent, is quite imminent, has also had a negative result. But that's all due to interest rate hedge on their debt. But the underlying performance has also been solid.
Well, Miani, I want to take a look at the Mediclinic business. Interesting business adding to the group at some point. This was obviously listed on the JSE. We are now delisted from that perspective. But there was an interesting impairment on the Swiss assets of Mediclinic, some 3.4 billion rands of impairments there. Anything to be worried about there? Is that a once-off thing? I mean, we know that, if I remember correctly, the last time you and I caught up last year, there were impairments as well within some of the other businesses, and that has kind of come down as well. But the 3.4 billion from the Swiss business seems to stand out to me. Is there something that's happening there that has you concerned?
Jimmy, there's nothing to concern about the Swiss business. It's an accounting entry where they actually took a write-down on their properties because of the long-term prospects of the hospital business there. At a Remgro level, we're actually quite comfortable. The valuation that we're carrying in our NAV, the valuation that we do is not affected at all. In actual fact, the valuation that we've got is higher than our carrying value, so there is a bit of headroom there for us. So we're very comfortable about our valuation of Mediclinic overall. We're comfortable about the Swiss business. As you can see in the results, the Swiss business has improved, actually. It's just a matter of accounting entry that they think the recovery is going to be a bit longer, and then they had to take a provision on the property, of the value of the properties.
Well, Miani, before I let you go, you bring up the net asset value, and this is probably the most exciting part of the conversation you and I have every single time we catch up, and that is the discount that the share price is trading to the net asset value. It seems that discount is as stubborn as can be and doesn't seem to be narrowing. Every time you and I speak, it is above the 40% mark, sometimes even above the 45% mark, as it is in this financial year. Is this just the destiny of investment firms and holding firms such as Remgro, that the market may never truly appreciate the sum of the underlying assets, and this is probably what we have to contend with as a reality?
Maybe there's some truth in that. I think at least if you look at the last couple of months, the discount has narrowed from 45 to just below 40, but that's actually still a moot point. So yes, it is, the discount is there. It's quite persistent. It's quite sticky. I think it's not just a Remgro thing. If you look on the international investment holding companies, the discounts are there as well, and they also more or less in that range. If you look at South African investment holding companies, probably pretty much the same. So maybe that is just a sign of the times at this point in time, and maybe it's a cyclical thing and it will come down. But as I always said to you in the past, I mean, we've got no control of the discount. The market determines the discount. The only thing that we can do is that make sure that the underlying company perform, that the cash flow is there, that we can pay good dividends, and all of these things we've done. And hopefully that will help in actually narrowing the discount, that the investors can actually appreciate the quality of our underlying assets.
And the last thing anyone wants to do is unbundle under pressure to narrow a discount that could potentially narrow itself in the long term. Well, Miani, before I let you go, your thoughts around where we stand from a market perspective going into the new financial year. A business like Remgro is a business that's deeply exposed to some of the cyclicalities of some of the business units. I mean, within the Heineken beverages business, as an example, the beverages unit there, or the beverages life cycle is different to the healthcare life cycle, to some of the consumer staples that we have in the form of RCL Foods. How are you seeing just kind of the overall landscape of the market going into the new financial year across all of your portfolio assets? And does the business feel that maybe some of the assets might have a stronger year in the new year?
Yeah, I think it's, I can't give you the exact details because that will be obviously be inside information. But what I said at the analyst presentation meeting this morning, the positive momentum that we had for this financial year under review has carried over into the new financial year. So the momentum is still there. Long may it last, as I always say. But I think we must see that against the backdrop of a very constrained economy, muted growth and things like that. So I think in a very constrained environment, our business are performing very well. So it always, I always talk about the defensive nature of our business, so that in tough times, they still perform. And I think that's a testament of the quality of the businesses that we've got.
Quality will always exceed quantity, and that is why the Remgro Group continues to have a strong financial year despite the discount that the business trades at and despite some of the moving parts within some of their smaller portfolio assets. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Yanni Durant, the Chief Executive Officer of Remgro Limited, joining us to give us an update on the 2025 financial year that was for them.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The nation of Taiwan, the world's largest semiconductor manufacturing nation, has decided to restrict exports to South Africa, chip exports in particular. And this is in likely response to the recent developments from a political perspective between Taiwan and South Africa. I'm joined on the line by tech journalist at Business Day, Mudiwa Gavaza. Take a look at this and see what we make of it. Mudiwa, always lovely having you on the show. Always lovely catching up. I can't say I'm too surprised by these developments, given what's been happening between South Africa and Taiwan recently. What do you make of the decision by Taiwan to restrict exports?
It's an interesting one. And once again, it's another fight that South Africa has to, can I call it fight or manage? I think that's a better word. It's something else that the country needs to manage. But I do think that going forward, one of the big things that's happening in 2025, which South Africa has to do, which other countries are being forced to do as well, is to reset how they think about their supply chains, and also at the same time making sure that there is a diversity, because you really cannot exist in the digital economy without that steady supply when it comes to some of those chips.
Madiwa, let's look at that supply chain. Perhaps let's look at that first, and then we'll come back and look at what it means for the South African market. We're seeing more and more that countries, economies, are starting to weaponize their edge. Whether they're doing it in retaliation to what's being done, whether they're doing it to gain a competitive advantage, countries out there are not afraid to now say, this is what we strategically lead the world in, and therefore we're going to leverage that into conversations that we feel we are able to.
Yeah, so, and I think everything is just coming down to what you call this, to that leverage. When I started covering technology, I really didn't think that there was going to be this much, geopolitics that is involved. But, you know, here we are. And fortunately, unfortunately, this is one of those moves where it's almost a tit for tat. And once again, it's another situation where South Africa's association with I think we can associate with BRICS, but more specifically China, comes to the fore when it comes to something like this. That's one. And then secondly, it's also just that balancing act of, you know, a lot of lines being redrawn, in the ground. What I'm keen to see is what do moves like this do longer term for some of the what do moves like this do, you know, when it comes to, you know, making some of those moves around where people come in and get their supplies, and when I say the supplies, I'm talking more about can I call them redrawing of the alliances, but more specifically, if you are South Africa, is it worth it for us to be coming in and doing self-manufacturing when it comes to some of these things? We've seen countries like the US and other countries deciding that they're going to move supply and manufacturing of some of these things. You won't be able to get your high-order chips production, to inland, very soon, but you can do, some of the older chips that are going to go into your fridges, your cars, etc. That type of thing can be done. But I wonder, is this enough of an impetus to make South Africa change their trade policy to that extent?
Madiwa, you touched on geopolitics starting to weigh in on the tech space. And I mean, I want to look at the reasons here. I mean, the Taiwanese foreign ministry has said that in no uncertain terms that the decision taken here by Taiwan emerged following Pretoria's decision to downgrade Taipei's representative office. I think this took place a couple of months ago where, from our perspective, we had almost sort of pushed for Taiwan to then move its embassy from Pretoria to Johannesburg and effectively downgrade their representative office status within South Africa. That Taiwan was clearly not happy with, and this is their retaliatory response. Was that a mistake on our part?
I don't know if I can call it a mistake. I think in this particular area, I can just weigh in. I'm not an expert when it comes to things like your trade policy. But however, in 2025, we just have seen, that situation where if a country makes a move, we are almost expecting that in 2025, there's going to be a retaliation of some sort, because we always have to look at the alternative, right? If South Africa doesn't respond, or if Taiwan doesn't respond to what South Africa does and vice versa, whichever way it goes, you risk, one of the parties becoming weaker or being seen as being weak in that particular situation. So not sure if it was the right move, but I do think where we are right now geopolitically, a move is almost warranted or expected given everything that's going on.
Madiwa, before I let you go, what does this then do for supply chains and value chains? I mean, if we're looking at, for example, the chip sector or the chip industry and the AI industry, South Africa isn't idle in that space. Things like platinum group metals, like palladium, go into the manufacturing process and they're essential for the global semiconductor industry. So clearly we do still have a part to play, especially given that we are one of the world's largest producers of palladium. Do we then strategically have this conversation and say, for the sake of supply chains, for the sake of relationships, let's kind of come to the party somewhere? I imagine these are the sorts of conversations that President Trump has been having following things like the tariffs that he's announced on his part. How does South Africa play this?
And I'm going to go back to what I said just now about that national policy and that national investment does, you know, do moves, you know, like this, create an impetus for onshoring some of the supply when it comes to some of the chips. It's never going to be, fine, not to say it's never, but in the short term, it wouldn't be the latest and greatest in terms of chips. But you could spin up, you know, production for some of the older chips that are then used in your cars, your appliances, etc. So that can be done. What I think is a perhaps more feasible approach is, you know, to have a couple of countries coming together and then, you know, putting some of that together, right? That's one aspect. The other aspect, I think, given everything else that's going on, right, is do you take the existing supply that South Africa has of some of the PGM metals that you mentioned earlier on, and say, you know what, we are going to, you know, perhaps relook at, you know, which countries we're supplying to and what type of leverage, you know, can we use given these types of, you know, raw materials? What type of downstream supplies can we secure for ourselves, you know, leveraging what's there? South Africa already leverages its position, but the question would just be more around how do you leverage that position even more, beyond all of that.
Global trade is certainly shaping up to look more interesting than it has before, and this is what's driving some of the decisions that we are going to be continuing to look at. But for now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Madiwa Kavaza for taking us through his thoughts around the decision by Taiwan to restrict chip exports to South Africa following South Africa's decision to pressure Taiwan to move their embassy.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This segment is brought to you by Bonitas, medical aid for South Africa. Medical aid can be one of the hardest things to decide on, particularly if you are looking to make sure you are adequately covered. And we're going to take a look at this and see if we can identify some key insights that might help us make better medical aid decisions. Joined on the line by the principal officer at the Bonitas Medical Fund, Lee Keller-Coppen, to take a look at this and see what to make of it. Lee, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start at the very beginning. If someone's looking at a medical aid plan, what are the considerations? What do I need to be thinking about here?
Jimmy, good evening, and thanks for having me on the show, and good evening to the listeners. Jimmy, I think before we answer that very important question that you've posed to me, I think just taking a step back, you know, medical aid right now, considering the South African context and the pressures that consumers are under, you know, a most recent report shows that 70% of South Africans report financial strain. Just under 33% is unemployed, and there's growth in credit card originators, which shows, you know, affordability is impacting the consumer's purse. Further to that, if you look in terms of just the double-digit life insurance policy cancellations that's taking place, tells us that from a medical aid, when choosing it, we as medical schemes needs to be very considerate in terms of the affordability aspects that members experience. But because healthcare and medical aid also caters or is there for your health, you know, this affordability issues obviously affects the health. We see an increase in terms of disability claims, an increase in terms of mental health. If you look in terms of the onset and increase of non-communicable diseases and the deaths over the last 70 years, can tell you that, you know, if one looks at the system holistically, it places immense amounts of pressure in relation to the consumer, in relation to the health, especially as it relates to mental health, depression, and anxiety. So, Jimmy, with that context in mind and answering your question in terms of choosing a medical aid plan, it's very important for consumers to consider what their budgets are, but more so in terms of what is their healthcare needs and at what life stage they are at. And from a Bonita's perspective, those are all the different elements that we carefully consider when designing our medical products or medical scheme products, the benefits and the pricings associated with it. So members, in short, have to consider in terms of what is their affordability and weigh that up in relation to what their healthcare needs is, at what life stage they are, if they're going to make some key decisions like starting a family. And those are all some of the, you know, immediate aspects that must be considered in choosing their medical aid option and the medical aid brand. Allied to that is obviously you want to ensure that when choosing a medical aid is that do they understand your needs and is the service elements, the transactional consumer elements being delivered with an understanding that appreciates where they are in their life in relation to the services.
Lee, when we think about some of the medical plans that you alluded to, for some people, it can be a bit overwhelming to try and figure out which is the right plan for them. As you said, a lot of that comes down to some of the medical needs and some of the budgetary constraints that consumers have to deal with and contend with. But let's get into some of it from a medical aid perspective. These plans obviously offer different levels of coverage as well. And I guess it's important to then look at what it is you're covered for and some of the fine print behind some of these plans when you're looking to make that informed decision. How do you go about this? Is there someone you can speak to? Is there a process you can follow to just identify which plan is best for you?
100%. So the starting point, obviously, is to, as I've mentioned in my opening statement, understand your needs. But once you understand that, is also read and understand specifically what those options entail. Whether it's as basic as a hospital plan or a comprehensive plan that sets out in terms of different coverage, is read clearly the details that's outlined and the medical aid brochures. In the case of Bonita's, we've got quite extensive information that we provide within our on our website or on our mobile websites to ensure that members actually understand it and can compare their plans and understand the needs related to it. But from a Bonita's perspective, we also one of the schemes that still very much rely and we value that relationship with brokers, where a member can actually contact a broker and actually get them to provide good advice and comparative advice and making sense of the amount of detail and medical aid language that's being utilized to make an informed decision.
Lee, before I let you go, I want to take a look at the different service providers out there. Obviously, Bonita's has been around for many, many, many years. If I remember correctly, I think at some point my mother was on Bonita's medical aid as a government employee at one point. When we look at the plans out there and we look at the service providers out there in the market, what then starts to differentiate service providers? What gives a company like Bonita's the edge in the medical landscape for its consumers?
Jimmy, first of all, as you rightfully said, we've been around for decades. We're the second largest open medical scheme representing over 730,000 beneficiaries. What is key for us is our financial sustainability. That's our ability to pay claims. And we boast a very healthy solvency of just over 38%, which is above the 25% regulatory threshold, a AA+ rating. Those are just some of our corporate financial indicators to give assurance to our members that we are able to pay their claims. But delving into our actual options is that we design options across all life stages, and that can cater from the young to the aged, and it is priced appropriately for where you are in terms of your lifestyle. but more so we pride ourselves in terms of service. We've been several times recognized by independent researchers as an industry leader and as the best medical aid to consider within South Africa right now when it comes to customer service and experience.
Medical aids are important if you are looking to look after your health or the health of your loved ones, and it's important to ask the right questions before you decide on a medical aid partner. We're going to leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the principal officer at Bonitas Medical Fund, Lee Kalakopan, for joining us to give us a sense of some of the considerations that go into making decisions around one's medical aid and what consumers should be looking at. This segment was brought to you by Bonitas Medical Aid for South Africa.
Medical aid plans, they're normally like this.
So, you'll need to take this form and this. So don't forget this too. Okay, wait. Don't forget this one. Wait. Okay, done.
My back!
Sorry, sir. That's gonna have to come out of your savings.
At Bonitas, we make our plans simple, so they're easy to understand. We also offer a benefit booster and a range of other benefits that don't come off your savings. Visit bonitas.co.za when you need us. Bonitas, medical aid for South Africa. T's and C's apply.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by Nedbank Agribusiness. Think bigger. Think Nedbank Commercial Banking. See money differently. Nedbank. A couple of weeks ago, we spoke about the impact that foot and mouth disease was having on the beef market in South Africa and what it meant for beef prices at the local retailers. We're going to be taking a look at this and seeing if we can make sense of what's going on. It seems as though the beef prices are still relatively high in South Africa, despite the fact that we potentially have foot and mouth disease contained for the time being. Once again, I'm joined on the line by the Chief Executive Officer of the Red Meat Producers Association, Professor Frikkie Maree, to take a look at this and see what to make of it. Prof, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you back on the show. What is the latest on the foot and mouth situation? Is that under control? Have farmers and producers got that under control?
I think it's difficult to define under control. I think, in my opinion, the disease will be under control if you do not see any further spreading of the disease. Currently, that is not the case. I think industry as well as government are really trying to contain the outbreaks, trying to vaccinate as soon as possible when there's a new outbreak. But since we have last spoken, the disease has spread further. I think the previous time it was quite in the news due to the outbreak in current beef, and in the meanwhile, some of the smaller feedlots were also affected. But at this stage, the disease is spread quite wide in KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Gauteng, the Northwest province, as well as the northern part of the Free State. And the producers, they are really struggling. Even if you are not positive, but if you are in those areas, the feedlots, etc., are just too afraid to buy animals from those areas. And the supply of wiener calves is limited due to this disease.
Prof, would you say this is still what contributes towards the elevated beef prices we're continuing to see at retail outlets?
I think we should start actually earlier this year, before this whole foot and mouth thing happened. We already saw an increase in prices due to a shortage from the market. There was just less animals this year in the market, and we saw some price spikes. And then on top of that, foot and mouth came in current beef, and that created a lot of market panic, with panic buying, carcass prices jumping 45% up year on year. So that situation did calm a bit. Currently, we're around 50% higher year on year if you talk about carcass prices, but it is still high if you look at the increase year on year, and I can most certainly see that consumers also feel that pressure. The consumer price did not increase as much as the carcass price, so the value chain definitely took up a loss during a large part of this period. But the prices remain relatively high.
Prof, what of the mitigation measures that some of our producers are putting in place? I know South African producers take great pride in making sure that they deliver the highest quality. And what are they doing from a risk mitigation perspective?
Yeah, I think if you talk about quality, as I have mentioned, the meat remains safe. So the quality of meat that is on the shelves remains safe. So risk mitigation for producers and feedlots and abattoirs is more in the line of being able to sell your animals, being able to buy animals if you are a feedlot, being able, if you are positive, to live out the quarantine periods after you are vaccinated before you can slaughter. And unfortunately, there's not much you can do. There's regulations from government that must be followed. And at the end, it basically just slows down the value chain. If you look at the whole value chain, from the producer who cannot sell for a while if he's positive, or up to a year in some cases, to the feedlot that have to vaccinate everything and then wait a few months before they can slaughter. The abattoir is going to lose money from the fifth quarter that at the beginning you may not use, and later on you can use it. So you are basically slowing this whole value chain down. So there's really not much that any of this role players can do to ensure that demand and supply is back up and running as previously. We just have to live it out.
Prof, speaking of demand and supply, what percentage of the red meat that is produced in South Africa is exported, and what percentage of it remains at home?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. If we look at the 2024 figures, we don't have the figures for now, or for 2025, the total yet. If I'm talking about under correction, we exported about, I think, around 10% of the beef in South Africa, while the sheep was a little bit less. We are busy increasing the export numbers for both beef as well as lamb and mutton. But we are a net exporter. And that is why FMD is so important. Luckily, up till this stage, it was only China who have closed their borders. The other countries that we are exporting to are still happy to take our product. But we actually need to get to a point where we can export to other countries as well that is FMD sensitive, as we would really like to export a larger share of the product we produce. We produce a product of exceptional quality, and we have to get our biosecurity and animal health status in such a position that we can do that.
Foot and mouth disease continues to rear its ugly head in the red meat industry, but South African producers are handling it as best they can, and more importantly, South African consumers continue to remain safe to consume the meat. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Prof. Frikkie Mare, the CEO of the Red Meat Producers Association, for giving us an update on some of the challenges that continue to persist in the beef and red meat market. This feature was brought to you by Nedbank Agribusiness. Think bigger? Think Nedbank Commercial Banking. See money differently. Nedbank.
What if a bank didn't just finance your farm, but helped you grow it? Nedbank Agribusiness offers more than just financial solutions. Our experts provide deep industry insights to help you identify opportunities and risks within your business earlier. Agriculture evolves, and so do we. We stay connected to industry stakeholders and the latest research, ensuring your business thrives on every hectare. So when you think growth, think bigger. Think Nedbank Commercial Banking. See money differently. Nedbank, we're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
That's the show for today, folks. If you've missed any of the conversations, they will be put up as podcasts and you can catch up on them tomorrow at your leisure during the public holiday. Before we go, one thing that we didn't get to cover on the show that has been making the rounds in the news sphere is that Botswana potentially is looking to take up a majority stake in De Beers, and they are reaching out to the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Oman, amongst others, to see if they can help facilitate that transaction and help facilitate the additional share purchases there. We'll keep an eye on that and see how that unfolds. It's something we've covered before. It's something that's of particular interest for both De Beers and Botswana as the world's largest producer of diamonds. But that's going to have to be a conversation that we'll have to come back to, because for now it is coming up to 7 o'clock. Greg Coase is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. From my side, a happy Heritage Day tomorrow and good night.